Blog Talk Radio.
Freed from the criminal work, I can get back to my roots, the bigger battles, the organized mass action supported by sweeping legal challenges with my skill and experience. I'm quite certain I can get this organization right back in line with its core beliefs.
This organization?
Yes.
Yeah. I wasn't aware that we had strayed.
Well, I'm not talking about nickel and dime reformism. I'm talking about igniting a sustained mass movement supported by rule change and injunctive relief and aggregate results using class action tactics. I'm talking about a return to using activist litigation creatively, defensively, counteroffensively.
I am very proud of what we've done here. I think we are making significant headway in many, many areas.
Oh, in my experience, that's an excuse to feel good and to slack off.
Welcome, everybody, to Cinema Royale. I'm Travis Hobson, and I'm laughing at that clip from Roman J. Israel, starring Denzel Washington. That scene also features Carmen Ejogo, who seems to be everywhere right now. I think I've seen her in about four or five, maybe six movies in the last few months alone. She is just everywhere right now. I've started to call her the ubiquitous Carmen Ejogo because, you know, I used to call it, only the last person I used to call that was Olivia Wilde like a couple years ago when she seemed to be in every movie. She was the ubiquitous Olivia Wilde. Now it's the ubiquitous Carmen Ejogo. And I think there's somebody else out there. Domhnall Gleeson is like that right now. I call him the ubiquitous Domhnall Gleeson. And that scene is funny to me because it encapsulates so much about Roman J. Israel. It is the most awkward role that Denzel Washington's ever taken. And I always say that anytime Denzel is in a movie, it doesn't matter what the movie is or what his role is, he's always the coolest person in the room. This is the first time where I can't say that. So I'm anxious to hear what my buddy Chris Bumbray from JoeBo.com, I'm anxious to hear what his opinion of Roman J. Israel is. Because I know we saw it a few months ago at TIFF, I think. And I think there's been some edits to it. But it features his boy Denzel. His boy, his best friend, Denzel. So I want to hear what he thinks about his performance in this rather nerdy, kind of geeky role and see what he thinks about it. We got a couple other big movies that I want to talk about. This is an awards season type episode because the next film we're going to talk about after that is Darkest Hour with Gary Oldman as Winston Churchill. People have been buzzing about his performance in that one. And after that is Luca Guadagnino's Call Me By Your Name, which premiered at Sundance earlier this year. And I skipped it, of course, because I don't know. I probably went to go see something silly. I don't know. I probably went to go see like Patty Cakes or something. I don't know. I probably went to go see something that would not end up having the same acclaim as Call Me By Your Name. I don't know what possessed me to not go to that one. I love Luca Guadagnino's movies. Well, I mean, for the most part, I do. I don't love them all, but I like the settings of them. And I don't know what possessed me not to go see it. I don't know what I went to see instead of it, but it must have been really great. Made me not go see this one. So we'll have these three movies today, and we got Blu-rays, of course, and a lot of Justice League news. And I figure by the time I get around to the news, we'll have Justice League's second week box office take. I expect it will get hammered by Coco this week. I expect that is what will happen. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. But there's a lot of stuff going on around Justice League right now after its lackluster box office last week. Who knows where the DCU is going to go from here on out. I have some ideas. Hopefully we'll have time to get to those within the hour. And if I'm going to do that, I really should just get right to the show. But before I do that, let me remind everybody to go and check out Critical, the Movie Critics Network on blogtalkradio.com. You can also find us on Facebook. We've got a lot of shows out there for you, a lot of different podcasts. Whatever your interests are, we got them for you. I want to say I appreciate all of you who have been following the network, helping us grow. It's been really great. I need to get Chris Bonebray to do a show. Joe Blow probably won't let him. They probably got him under some sort of exclusive deal. I don't know, some shit like that. But I don't know. I need to talk to him about that. Anyway, let's get this show on the road. What up, Chris?
Funny you mentioned that. I might be able to, maybe me and one of the other Joe Blow guys, the boss at Joe Blow, might be able to talk to you about that a little bit later, but we'll see.
shoot me a message, man. I'll be around. Good to talk to you, man. These are always my favorite episodes, and I get to have you come on here and talk with me about
Thank movies, you. Yeah, fine. I love it. It's fun. I'm sorry about last time. I don't know if everybody knows this, but Travis and I – I was supposed to be on the show and I left him high and dry. I'm really sorry about that, man. I feel really bad. I was having a family emergency.
Man, none of that stuff matters to me. The only thing that matters to me is that everything is cool, that you're all right. The show stuff is secondary. All those movie stuff is secondary. I'm perfectly fine with it. As long as
but
you're okay.
It's suitable, though, that I'm talking about Roman J. Israel Esquire, because, as you mentioned, Denzel and I, we have a special relationship.
Yes.
D-Wash. We got a special relationship going on.
Yes.
Do you listen to the Denzel's The Greatest Actor Ever podcast?
No, but it sounds like I need to.
it's one of the guys from The Daily Show, Kumail Bell, and another guy. They're both really funny, but it's pretty good. They go through all the Denzel movies and they count down like all the ticks and stuff like that that he has.
Yeah.
Does he do the stammering thing? Like, I don't. The cool ticks.
He's been doing that since Mississippi Masala, man. He's been doing it for a while.
It works. I was watching Soldier's Story not long ago. It's like 20 minutes and he's doing it then. But it's funny. I do love Denzel Washington, right? When I say these like this, I mean it as a compliment because, it's one of the things about Denzel Washington, and I've always said this, is that he's probably the last actor besides maybe Tom Cruise where you don't go to see the movie necessarily. You go to see Denzel. It's like I'm going to see a Denzel Washington movie. And it's kind of like he's at that point. I think he's really an icon, right? Like the way that somebody like John Wayne was an icon. I'm going to see the new John Wayne. I'm going to see the new Denzel Washington because he's like that. Yep. But it's really interesting though that he did Roman J. Israel Esquire because, as you were saying, it's probably one of the biggest stretches in his career. Like I'm trying to think back to the last time that he really stretched like this, and it's I don't really know.
I was trying to think of that too. When I was getting ready for this, and I was like, I can't remember. I was looking down at his filmography, and I was like, I'm not seeing anything where I can't just say he's just Denzel being Denzel kind of in all these movies. In The Magnificent Seven, he's still kind of just being Denzel.
As a cowboy, or like you have bone collector paralyzed Denzel, but he's still Denzel. Alcoholic coke sniffing Denzel, but he's still Denzel, and it's like he's got like he's time traveling Denzel in Deja Vu. It's great. And I love that about him, even I was watching Ricochet not long ago because I wrote it up for my column on Joe Blow, best movie you never saw. And this was like, this was 25 years ago. But he's fully formed at the time, he was Denzel back then even. Fully formed. He had a mustache. It was Denzel with a mustache.
Yep.
Nineties mustache. Or it was New Jack Swing Denzel. It was the boxing stuff. But he was great. But I thought was really interesting about Roman J. Israel Esquire, and I did see it at TIFF, but it got a lot of mixed reviews, and I was one of the few really positive ones. And it was funny because Sony actually emailed me the next day to tell me to put my review up on Rotten Tomatoes. It was already up, but I think they were desperate to have some red up there. But what's interesting about it is that
I hate when I get those emails.
I do too. And the thing about it is that I know. Yeah, it's like, wait a minute, but the thing is, the thing is it's changed apparently since I've seen it, and I haven't seen the new cut yet. I'm hoping to see it next week, but apparently it's about 15 minutes shorter, and they rearranged a couple scenes and they changed some of the music. It was a little long when I saw it, but you know, I imagine that the new cut is probably a bit better. But I mean, overall I really liked it. You liked it too, didn't you?
I actually thought it was disappointing. I really liked Denzel's performance, but
his
performance is great. His performance is fantastic, and you know, he plays this former activist who's been working in this law firm for decades.
Well, and he's on the spectrum too a bit. I mean, he's a bit,
clearly,
you know, autistic, I'd say, or Asperger's
on the spectrum. Yeah, and he, you know, he's been working background in this little two-person legal law firm, and you know, he's kind of thrust into the spotlight when the other one goes down. And he faces a sort of crisis of morality, you know, for people who don't know what the plot is, you know, he faces a sort of crisis of morality. He takes a job at this big law firm run by Colin Farrell, you know, and he gets access to the wealth that he's kind of denied himself all these years. And he has this one great line in the movie where he's like, "I'm tired of doing the impossible for the ungrateful." And that kind of encapsulates a lot of the movie right there. It's just, it's a fantastic scene. I was hoping I could find that particular clip. It was too
long. There's another really good scene too, where he's at that activist meeting, and then he goes to the guy. He's like, "Hey, what's this? Why are you not giving these two sisters your seats?" And then they're like, "Wow, we don't need these seats." And it was kind of they were offended by his kind of. They found him chauvinistic, and it was that when they talked back to him. Like, I've never seen that in a Denzel Washington movie before, where he just like kind of crumbles.
Right.
You just cannot talk back to them. Like, they just could nail them, you know, and it's
right.
I've never seen that before
because he's always the
most confident guy.
Yeah, and I feel like this movie has a ton of great ideas. Like, that scene you just talked about, you know, kind of shows how time has really passed this guy by in a lot of ways. You know, the things that he thinks are chivalrous and polite are now seen by some to be just the polar opposite, and he does not understand that. Just like the activism movement in general has sort of passed him by in a lot of ways too. A lot of scenes have been going on, but this guy has passed him by. But this movie has a lot of great ideas that I don't think Dan Gilroy ever coalesces, or he has like one too many ideas. Like,
well, the thing about
the idea of this activist kind of, you know, trying to find his way in modern society is a great idea. The idea of this activist sort of losing his way and indulging in the things that he denied himself is a great idea. You know, the idea of him kind of getting wrapped up in a dangerous money scheme is a great idea. These are all great ideas. This character played by Colin Farrell is a great idea. You know, this guy who used to be his partner's some mysterious presence in his partner's past is a great idea. I don't know if any of them were actually like taken to their full extent ever.
Well,
and I think that's
any
one
of
the problems I had with it.
Been a movie unto itself, right? And I think that that's what people were disappointed with Roman J. Israel Esquire, because it wasn't that kind of thing. Like, it really is a character study, and a lot of the danger kind of seems to exist in his head a bit, you know. And one of the things I really liked about the movie, and I wanted to say, was that Colin Farrell's character I thought was great, because I was expecting him to be the villain, right? Like this kind of Iago type character, but you know, he wasn't. He was a super good. He was a really nice, like a genuinely good person who was trying to do his best. You know, he was a bit of a greedy attorney, but he was trying to help this guy the best he could, and he wanted to be a good lawyer, and he wanted to be a good person. And I thought that at least it was like that in the cut that I saw. I don't know if that's changed or not, but I mean, it was kind of that was what I liked about it, right? And it was, you know, but like you said, there are a lot of things that don't really sync up, but then there are a couple great scenes, right? Like there's a scene where they think they found the dead hobo, right? And then the cops come, and then they're trying, and then they have that almost like really dangerous moment, and then it ends in like comedy kind of. And it was, there's a lot of scenes like that though. Really good scenes tied together, but it's a kind of a rambling plot, right? It's not like Nightcrawler, which was really focused, you know, and I think that's what people were disappointed by. But
I think that's what I was expecting. I think I was expecting
a lot of
similar takedown of the.
Though.
Yeah, I'm thinking a similar takedown of the legal system, and as it, you know, as Nightcrawler was of kind of, you know, hack journalism. I was expecting something like that.
They really didn't do the movie any favors though by bringing it to TIFF under the way that they did, because I don't know if you know about this, but what happened was, it was not part of the program. And about a week before TIFF happened, they said, we're going to have a sneak preview, special last-minute edition screening of Roman J. Israel Esquire, because the movie hadn't been done yet, and I guess it was done, and they decided they wanted to go in. So basically, Sony brought it in, but with nothing known about the movie at all, right? It had some still images, and that was it, and nobody knew anything about it. Well, they didn't hide it. They showed it like at the Ryerson, the biggest theater, and they did a separate press screening for it. I was at the premiere, though, at Ryerson, because, you know, I had to be there for my friend.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure, you know, Denzel had a seat waiting for you.
Yeah, right next to him and his son John David. Yeah, I know, we were just kind of hanging out, the three of us, throwing around.
Right.
You know, but it was one of those things nobody knew about it, and I was surprised by it too. I was kind of taken aback a little bit. And it was funny because what Denzel Washington said in the opening remarks was, he says, I don't really know what to say about this movie. I just, you know, I hope you guys like it. That was pretty much all he was saying, because I think he kind of sensed that it was a little bit different for him, right? And, you know, and I think that if they had done, like, maybe more like a traditional film where, you know, if it had had, like, a little more buzz, they'd showed some trailers, they gave people a taste of what kind of movie it was, and then kind of opened it up, and then the critics weren't, like, taken. You know, critics don't like to be something. I mean, I noticed these, a lot of them, too. A film festival is a terrible place for a movie to premiere, too. I mean, I've been at so many premieres, and, you know, whenever the movie's just okay or not amazing, they are so hard on it because they've been watching nonstop amazing movies all day long, right? So anything that's not absolutely amazing seems like a disappointment, right? And some of them are just waiting at this point, I'm telling you, because they write so many good reviews. They're just waiting with their knives out, trying to, like, eating at the idea that one of these movies is going to be bad and they're going to be the one to take it down, right? And it's really like that. And they don't get a fair shake, you know? Yeah. And I mean, I try to give them a fair shake, but they really don't. And then they're standing in the lobby and they're all talking. You've seen it at Sundance. They're standing in the lobby. They're all talking about it. And they're all kind of comparing notes. And if you dissent with them, if you don't agree with them, they basically try to make you feel like an idiot. I mean, they totally do, right? And
absolutely.
Yeah. You know, so it's kind of, I think that the movie totally fell victim to that a little bit. You know, that kind of group mentality, that groupthink that movie critics have all the time. I mean, you see it at Sundance, too. We all sit in the same place in the Echo
Film
Theater.
All film festivals are that, with big or small. It even happens here at Middleburg. You know,
yeah,
Middleburg has nothing but.
Section.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I thought it was underrated. I think I rarely went a little bit too positive on it because it was a reaction to that. I think I was pissed off that people weren't giving it a fair shake. You know, but I would say, you know, it's a solid 7 out of 10, I think.
It's legitimately tough to go to film festivals and be surrounded by opinion. The whole time by your peers, people you like and respect and things like that, and then to be the one to be like, I don't quite feel that way, and then, because
it's
natural to want to kind of be, you know, as opposite of them as possible in that kind of situation. So it's easy to either be too hard on a film or be too easy on a film. It's just happened so many times. It's just natural. It's human. It's not like you didn't do your job. It's just natural. It's human for people to be that way, to react that way. That's why it's sometimes good to kind of, you know, kind of make sure people understand the situation that you're watching these movies in sometimes.
Criticism nowadays, though, I mean, I'm telling you, it's going to be like this more and more. It's just the only reason, you know, we're doing what we're doing almost now is just to be an entry in Rotten Tomatoes and one line, and that's it.
It does feel
what's
that
your grade,
way.
What's your line, and that's that.
It does feel that way, and I hate it because, you know, the way Punch Drunk Critics is, you know, we have a bunch of writers on our staff, and I'm really the only one. Yeah, I'm really the only one of us that's on Rotten Tomatoes, so it's like whenever somebody else who writes a review that's really good, and you know, and then the studio always comes to me and is like, can you tell them to put it on Rotten Tomatoes? And like, I don't think they're on Rotten Tomatoes, so you're out of luck.
It's not that easy. Yeah.
So you're out of luck. And I didn't write it. So, and sometimes they push for me to write the review and I'm like, I can't do everything. Sorry. I can't do it. But I mean, it's not, I think Roman J. Israel was one of those movies I'm going to want to revisit at some point because, like you said...
I'm going to revisit it when I see it. You know, I mean, yeah. If we get a screener or something like that, I'll definitely revisit it.
I was really hoping we would get a screener of it, by the way. I don't think we've gotten one. But I want to revisit it because, like you said, there are a lot of great moments in it. And it is such a different performance for Denzel. I'm sitting there looking at my DVD shelf right, sitting right in front of me. And I have all these performances by Denzel all over the place. And I'm like... None of them are anything close to like what he does in Roman J. Israel. So I want to have that just for that, like almost like for posterity. It's like, oh, by the way, here's that really odd Denzel movie that he did a while back. It's like, it's just nothing.
When the one where Denzel went deep.
Right. So I'm curious to see how Roman J. Israel does. I have a feeling that it's going to be one of those. It's probably going to be a movie that doesn't do very well at the box office. I think it's kind of...
It's already not doing very well, but I have a feeling he might get nominated.
I don't know. I was trying to think about male performances this year that stand out.
Male performance is a very weak category this year. Very weak category.
Yeah. But, you know, female performances, I think it's going to be really strong because it tends to be that way. But the male performances, there aren't a lot of them, so you might be right. He might slide in there. So,
I think even James Franco might slide in for Disaster Artist.
Yes, we'll talk about that. I'm definitely going to talk about that one next week because we just got a screener of that. At least I did. So I'm anxious to talk about that. But let's talk about another movie that will almost certainly have a male performance nominated for Best Actor, and that is Darkest Hour. So let me take a moment and play a brief clip from Darkest Hour.
I believe we are to meet regularly.
Once a week, I'm afraid. How are you for Mondays?
I shall endeavor to be available on Mondays.
4 o'clock?
I nap at four.
Is that permissible?
No, but necessary. I work late.
Then perhaps lunchtime.
Lunch? Mondays. Your Majesty.
Prime Minister.
Sometimes it's hard to negotiate a meeting with the Queen or whoever it was you trying to negotiate a meeting with in that one. Darkest Hour stars Gary Oldman in a performance as Winston Churchill that has been getting rave reviews for months. I saw this at Middleburg just about a month or two ago. And the thing that really surprised me about it, Chris, is I went into it expecting another stodgy, boring biopic. I mean, I've seen two performances of Winston Churchill, two portrayals of Winston Churchill already this year, one by Brian Cox and the other one by John Lithgow. Was it The Crown, I think. And this is by far the best one I've seen out of those three. But what I liked about the film is that it wasn't boring at all. It was the complete opposite. It was exciting. It was the way that Joe Wright he sets it up as sort of a ticking clock scenario. Kind of like you're watching an episode of 24, and it's counting down the days because Germany is on the move. They're moving into Europe, and every single day on the calendar, it's literally ripping away the days from the calendar, and it's making all these conversations feel like they are super important, like every single day. And I was trying to explain it to my buddy Tim. I was like, the only reason why this movie works to me is because of the way they set it down, like the clock is ticking down to Armageddon. And that is the only reason why this thing is kind of edge of your seat exciting to me. Otherwise, I would have been bored out of my mind because I'm sick of Winston performances or portrayals or stories about him. But this one really worked for me. What did you think of Darkest Hour?
No, I liked it too. I mean, I thought it was an interesting companion piece to Dunkirk, because it's the same thing. It's the same premise.
Dunkirk
behind
and Their Finest, I said, would make an awesome trilogy.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. That's if you really want to get that whole thing, the evacuation of Dunkirk, I mean, you watch those three movies and you'll pretty much have it. I mean, I think you need to watch Darkest Hour would come first, then Dunkirk, and then it would be Their Finest because it's like the aftermath. Yep. So it's kind of cool. But, the thing about Darkest Hour, I liked it a lot. I thought that Oldman was great, and I'm sure that he'll get nominated and maybe even win. I have to say, though, as far as Winston Churchill performances go, I thought that he was a little bit, you know, of a caricature, to be honest. And I liked the movie a lot. I preferred, though, as a performance, I thought that John Lithgow in The Crown was the best.
Right.
I think that I probably
liked
Darkest Hour. Yeah, Darkest Hour is probably a better, you know, easier to watch, I think, because it's, you know, it's just a movie. But I thought that there were, you know, it was a little bit, you know, hammy at times. I really liked him. I think he did a great job, and I think he did exactly what Joe Wright wanted him to do. And definitely that's Joe Wright's style, right? Like, he's very theatrical, and he's very kind of over the top, you know. And I think it worked for that movie, because I think it's like you said, it made it not as stodgy and boring as it could have been. But yeah, I'm a little bit divided on it, though. I liked it. I liked it quite a bit, and I gave it a good review out of TIFF. It's not what I'm super in a rush to revisit, though. I mean, I liked it. It's just, I mean, I knew that story before. I mean, I'm actually a bit of a World War II history buff. I've taken classes on it and stuff like that at university, and I've done a lot of reading on it. And so I kind of knew the story already, and I'd read that book, but I liked it. It wasn't not necessarily top tier for me. Like, I don't know that I'm going to vote for him. For the critics, like, I might nominate him, but I don't know if I would vote for him to win. I mean, I think I was more impressed with Denzel's performance actually in Roman J, or even Franco's performance in Disaster Artist than I was with the Churchill performance, you know. But I think also that's holding Oldman to a really high standard, right? Because I think he is one of the best actors out there,
right?
The makeup. I wasn't crazy about the makeup. I thought it was a little too much.
Yeah, I mean, makeup is tough because, you know, I referenced Woody Harrelson in LBJ, whereas like the makeup was kind of distracting. It's like, Jesus Christ. It's really distracting.
Especially the makeup on Jennifer Jason Leigh in that movie. They made her look like she's not human. She looks like a villain from Dick Tracy.
Yeah, she really did have the kind of Wicked Witch nose, and it was just like, she kind of
horrible.
She looked like Flat Top
It was stupid.
It was exactly that same thing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm somebody who is in love with Jennifer Jason Leigh, so I'm like, come on, man.
I like her a lot.
Why y'all gotta do that? But I like Gary Oldman, I guess, because he kind of went out of his way to create his own version of Churchill, a version that I've not really seen. So I guess that's kind of the reason why I liked it. And that's for the movie. Since you're kind of a World War II buff, I mean, how fictional were a couple of those scenes in there? Because some of them, I was like, hey, did he really go and take that train ride with all those people in there?
No way he did. but it's one of those things, like, it's a crowd pleaser, right? Like, you know what?
It's a crowd pleaser.
My parents will love it. You know, it's that kind of thing. My parents are going to, like, that was a great movie.
Like, yeah, exactly.
They're like, oh, that was a wonderful film, you know. And it's just kind of, you're like, eh, was it? No, but I did like Darkest Hour, though.
I mean, I'm with you. I don't know if it's a movie that I'll be rushing out to go see again. Those kind of period pieces like that, I don't really rush out to go see anyway. I don't think I have any of them on my wall.
I love that. You know,
yeah,
I know
you do.
That
I mean, for me, it's not really the case, but for
like
you,
shit,
you
man.
Have you been watching your Dunkirk screeners? You got Dunkirk screeners.
Oh yeah.
Been watching them? Dunkirk. You got Dunkirk screeners, didn't you?
Oh well, I've seen Dunkirk already like 3 times.
Oh, okay. I was gonna say, if you got Dunkirk screeners,
all
you probably
the different formats.
Them.
All the different formats.
Yeah. Yeah. It's still in the
I actually met Nolan at a party at TIFF, and I had talked to him for a few minutes. So I was with this buddy of mine from Montreal who came to the party with me. It was like a cocktail, and he collects film prints. And then I was talking to Nolan very briefly about like film, and I was like, oh, well, my buddy here collects film prints. He goes, oh, really? What kind do you have? And they ended up talking for like 10 minutes about like celluloid. And I was like,
That was you hit right in Nolan's wheelhouse when you said that.
Yeah, they really hit it off. It was pretty funny.
Speaking of which, speaking of meeting people, are you going to go to the Critics' Choice in January?
I can't. It's too close to Sundance.
Me too. I can't do it. I can't do it either. I really want to. I went the one time and I haven't been able to go since, just because it's so close to Sundance all the time and I can't afford to do both. So it's just one of those things.
Definitely. Me too.
All right, let's take a quick break, and when we come back, you and I are going to wrap things up by talking about Luca Guadagnino's Call Me By Your Name, another movie that has been praised since it debuted at Sundance. So we'll be back. We'll be right back, everybody.
Dad always sits up front with Anquisa to navigate. She seems to like you a lot. She's more beautiful than she was last year. I saw her naked on a night swim once. Great body.
Trying to get me to like her?
What would be the harm in that?
Well, no harm. I just typically like to go those things on my own, if you don't mind.
And he likes to come up with those things on his own, if you don't mind, Chris. And I don't know who he's referring to, who he'd actually prefer to like in his movie. Luca Guadagnino's Call Me By Your Name has been, I think, one of the most talked about movies since it premiered at Sundance in January. I was saying earlier in the show that I don't know what it was that I saw that made me not go see this in January. That I must have skipped it for probably something like patty cakes or something like that. I have no idea what I skipped it for, but apparently I was just an idiot that day and I didn't go see it. But it's, like I said, it's a movie that's been talked about a lot. It stars Armie Hammer and Timothée Chalamet, who I think was a rising star. He's already becoming ubiquitous. I was just watching him in Lady Bird again last night, and I was like,
oh, and he's in Hostiles as well.
And he's in Hostiles too. Yep, he's also in Hostiles for like 30 seconds. He's in Hostiles.
Yeah. Exactly.
not very long. But this movie starts. It's basically a summer romance sort of film. And I don't want to give away too many details about it, but there's a lot of sexual tension coursing through.
That 17-year-old has a hell of a good summer.
He does. He has an awesome 6 weeks with Armie Hammer staying under the same roof. And I'm curious, what were your thoughts of Call Me By Your Name? Did you see this at TIFF or did you see this earlier?
I did see it at Sundance. Yeah, I saw it at Sundance at the critics screening. And what was really funny was I didn't know what to expect because beforehand I went for breakfast, right, at the Mountain Grill, right, you know, right by the screening room because it was at the Yarrow. And Luca Guadagnino was having breakfast right next to me, right at the table right next to me with James Ivory from Merchant Ivory, who wrote the movie, and Tom Bernard, the head of Sony Classics. And they were talking about the reaction to the premiere, and they're like, oh, it seemed like it went over really well, and people really liked it. And they were talking about when they were going to put it out, and then Luca Guadagnino went off about how apparently the New York Film Festival turned down a bigger Splash, which is a big shock, because, I mean, that was a great movie. But anyway... So I was excited to go see it, and I went to see it, and especially at Sundance, it really kind of cast a spell on you because it's cold and miserable a bit, but then you have this thing, this oasis, you know, of you're in Rome, you know, and suddenly you're watching, you know, it's just this beautiful thing.
Can we just say real quick before we can go any further, Luca Guadagnino he makes the most gorgeous freaking movies.
Yeah.
Like,
the people too.
Oh my God.
Are always really good looking in all of his movies.
Oh, yes.
And it was, and if it's funny, if you look at him and if you meet him, he looks exactly like Ralph Fiennes in A Bigger Splash. Like, he's got that same haircut, like the receding hairline and stuff like that.
Yeah. Like he looks
just like that. And I think he's, and he acts like that too a little bit, except with an Italian accent. Like, hey, but it was funny. I was watching Call Me By Your Name with some friends a little while ago, and they kept calling Armie Hammer Arm and Hammer.
Yeah, it was a great movie.
I mean, I thought it was a masterpiece then. I still think so. It ranks highly in my top 10. I think, you know, Armie Hammer, I've never been completely sold on him until about this year, because it was Free Fire. I thought he was great in Free Fire. And I really loved him in Call Me By Your Name. And this is the thing that's kind of sold me on Armie Hammer a bit. Because I always thought maybe he was a little bland. But
I always thought he was more hype than anything else for a while. You know, his first big splashy role was in The Social Network. And everybody sort of really liked him based off that. But it was more – that to me was such a flash role than anything else.
He's the kind of guy, the leading man that they try to make every couple of years. You know, big, good-looking white guy, blonde hair, blue eyes.
He looks like he should be a threatening leading man. And it seemed like they were trying. You know, they had the Lone Ranger. They were trying to make him.
There are a lot more interesting leading men out there, right? That aren't you know, 6'5", blonde hair, blue eyes, and white. You know, I mean, there are a lot more that never get that same shot that he seems to get constantly, right? And it's weird. That he, you know, he's had a bunch of flops, but it keeps coming up. You know, he keeps getting leading roles. But to be fair, though, now that I've seen these movies, I start to think that, okay, well, maybe there is more to him than somebody like, I mean, who's the last one they tried to make? It was Taylor Kitsch or something like that.
Yeah, I think you're probably right that there is more to him than this. He was also really good. He was also really good in Birth of a Nation.
He was great in Birth of a Nation. I mean, he did gave a really interesting review and not review interview in the Hollywood Reporter, where he talked about Nate Parker and that he had some interesting opinions.
Yeah, yeah. The double standard between him and Casey Affleck is what he was talking about, and I actually sort of agree with him on it, to be honest.
Yeah, but he's not wrong.
I think there was a concerted effort against Birth of a Nation, but we're not talking about that movie today. But yeah, and I'm kind of with you. This is one of those movies I think has sold me on Armie Hammer as being someone who can carry a movie like this, has more subtlety to him than I thought he did. I don't know if it'll translate to him being a multiplex mainstream kind of leading man. I don't know if that'll ever happen. I don't know if that's really where he's best suited. He might be better suited to films that are a little bit smaller and kind of character movies like this. This is essentially a two-person movie to him and. Yeah, and supporting roles. And
it's
him,
a supporting
him,
part, though. I mean, Timothy Chalamet is the star.
I think it's more equal than you're giving it credit for being. I think it's more equal than that. I mean, Chalamet is the primary focus, but you know, Hammer is so integral that I kind of find it hard to give him supporting. If they were going to do awards for it, yes, he would be put in supporting. But I think that's only because I think they're both fairly equal, though. But he is fantastic in this movie. Now when I watched it, though, I still left thinking, yeah, it's good. It's really good. I didn't quite think it deserved the tremendous praise that it was getting. I felt like some of the sexual tension was so forced at times. I was like, eh, you know, and then other times it was so subtle that I was like, yeah, I mean, it got a little slow for me. I think I got tired of the first hour of teasing. You know,
I don't know. I mean, to me, I was really invested in it from the beginning, I guess. I mean, you know, but, you know, it's funny because, I mean, we've talked about Luca Guadagnino before, and I'm usually kind of cool on his movies. And I think you liked A Bigger Splash a lot more than I did. But Call Me By Your Name is the first one of his movies I think I loved unreservedly. You know, and it was, I don't know, I really loved it. I'll never look at Peaches the same way again.
No, the same way American Pie, whenever you have you looking at apple pie again, the same way.
Yeah.
But no, I don't want people to think that I don't like this movie because I do.
No.
I think in terms of romantic love stories, this is about as sultry and nuanced as it gets. And, you know, of course, the perspective, obviously, you know, it is very much a gay love story. And then, you know, a lot of people don't, we don't get those in a major sort of studio effort like that. You don't get to see it very often. And I like that we got the chance to see it in this one without it becoming this big deal. You know what I mean?
No,
like,
I know.
It's not a big deal within the movie. It is just these two people who have this affection for one another, and that's all that
matters.
Well,
it's not tortured. It's not going to ruin their lives or something like that.
Right.
They're not going to die. Yeah. They don't. But one of them, you know, one of them doesn't end up dead. You know, it's not like that kind of thing.
Right. Of course, a big part of the reason why it is that way, you know, is where it takes place. You know,
yeah.
Culture is very different there. You know, so
yeah.
I mean, so it's already different. But yeah, you know, this part of me felt like, yeah, I don't know if it deserves the praise that it's getting, but it's definitely a movie that I think people should see. And like I said, I went to see Lady Bird last night, and I was telling a friend, I think you'll probably like, because they showed a trailer for Call Me By Your Name. I was like, I think you'd like this movie too. And, you know, I think this is one of those movies that you want to recommend to people to go see.
I still haven't seen Lady Bird.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I heard it's great.
That's disgusting. Has it not opened there yet?
No, it hasn't opened in Montreal yet. I'm dying to see it. I think it might open this weekend, but I'm going to see it soon.
Yeah, I was hoping it would send us a screener of it, but I figured they wouldn't. It's still fresh in theaters.
Yeah.
Kind of thought they did send us the Lady Bird recipe book.
Yeah.
Did you get that?
Yeah, I did.
I'm going to make that.
My booze showed up in one piece. Thank God it didn't break.
Your what?
My disaster artist booze showed up in one piece. Thank
oh,
God.
Oh, yeah. I got that, too. I also got the Okja pig.
I did,
pig.
Too. I have my Okja pig, though, and my Baymax from Big Hero 5, Big Hero 6, and my Alf
yeah.
doll, and getting up to some nasty shenanigans, though.
I'm making that Greta Gerwig stuffing, by the way. That's a
yeah.
recipe book. Cause
cool.
It's kind of like it looks like the stuffing that my ex-wife used to make with the ground
oh,
beef
nice.
In it and stuff like that, which is how I like it. So I'm like, yeah, I got
it. So you're going to marry Greta Gerwig, you're saying?
I'm definitely going to marry Greta Gerwig. I had
yeah.
my shot. I interviewed her a few weeks ago, and I had my shot, and I think I swung and missed. But, yeah, no. I
There's
don't
always an excellent.
I'm not as creative as Noah Baumbach, so I guess that's
huh.
one reason.
There's
so,
always
anyway,
next time.
There's always her next movie. I will
yeah.
definitely take another shot. but anyway, so yeah, that's all the movies we got for this week. Anything you're looking forward to that's coming up? Have we seen
Not
everything
really. I mean,
now,
you know,
other than?
Oh, no,
I, mean,
I haven't seen I haven't seen Phantom Thread. I haven't seen Lady Bird.
Yeah.
I haven't seen. Well, I'm psyched to see the reshot All the Money in the World. I'm interested to see that.
Yes.
I don't think I'm going to get a chance to see it before voting. There's no way. Cause it's in a week.
So
but it's Star Wars, of course. You know, I'm so psyched to see that. But,
oh, yeah. Really
you know, my
out.
Next thing, I think, is I'm actually really excited to see White Boy Rick. I don't think it's going to come out in January, though. I think it's supposed to come out in January, but they haven't released
yeah.
the trailer yet. I think it's going to get delayed
yeah.
like several
it's
months.
Yep. It's
yeah.
definitely.
Maybe it'll go to Sundance.
That would be nice if it did. There was something else
yeah.
I saw that was coming out in January that I think I thought was might be at Sundance. I can't think what it is. I don't know. I don't remember. We should be getting our Sundance updates pretty soon.
This week.
Actually.
This week, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. So I am excited for that. I am buying my ticket next week. My plane ticket. And I'll be all set. I'm always excited for Sundance, of course. I always
Yeah,
I'm
excited to see you.
Very complete.
Hang out.
Good. I'd be happy if there was the Raid 3 there for once, but you know, never gonna happen.
They never even shot it. It's not even shot.
I know.
Maybe his new one though, Apostle, might be there.
Oh, that's right.
Could be. Yeah.
That would be vicious. That was there. That
yeah.
would be vicious. That in fact, that would be a perfect movie to have there.
Yeah,
so that would be awesome. Because after that, he's doing Deathstroke, for DC Comics, Warner Brothers. So yeah, so we might not ever get the Raid 3, or we'll get it like in 2021, 2022,
yeah.
or somewhere around there. Which
yeah,
I know he's too busy. Even though he's not, it's not like he makes a ton of movies. It's not like he's you know, it's not like he's, what's his name?
They haven't done anything since the raid, too, but, you know, it takes time.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. Well, Gareth Evans, as long as he keeps making movies, I'm happy. Even if he makes one every few years, I'm happy. Anyway, my homie, this has been great, as always, talking movies with you. I'm going to have you back on here. Got to have you back on here next month to talk about either end of the year stuff or Star Wars or something. But or Sundance. We might have to talk about the Sundance.
All the money in the world, we should talk about that one, too. I'm curious to see
absolutely.
How that's going to end up. Quite an experiment.
Yeah, we're definitely going to do that. But we're definitely going to talk about the Sundance lineup when it comes out, too. So.
Cool, man.
But, all right, man. I appreciate you coming on here. Everybody, check out my boy Chris Bumbray over at JilloBlow.com. Yeah, he does more than reviews. He does a lot of, like, little columns that I dig, like movies you've never seen before. And what was the other one that I really like is the
– Good Bad and the Badass, though.
Yes,
it's
that's
kind of
kind of
irregular because I've run out of people. I've been doing it for so long. I've run out of people. So it's getting a bit irregular.
Yeah, I like that one too. So go ahead and check out all the stuff. You know, you guys know I don't really like very many film critics, but Chris is one of the few that I do. So go and check out this stuff.
You too.
All right, my friend. I will talk to you soon. All right, that's Chris Bumbray at JilloBlow.com. All right, let's take a quick break and when we come back. We're going to wrap up the show with Blu-rays and some movie news on Justice League. All right, we'll be right back. I'm back. Wow, we're running out of time here. We only got about 13 minutes left in the show. So let me jump right into what's coming out on Blu-ray. This will be next week, November 28th. I thought there'd be a lot more since we're just coming off of Black Monday, Black Friday, Cyber Monday is tomorrow. I thought there'd be more, but there's not much coming out this week at all. At least not much worth buying anyway. Steven Soderbergh's Logan Lucky. His return film, starring Channing Tatum and Adam Driver and a whole bunch of other people, including Riley Coe. I love this film. It's a heist movie, heist comedy. It didn't do well at the box office, which I thought was a little surprising. Now, I mean, it's not like Steven Soderbergh's movies are all box office giants anyway, especially the last few. But I expected more out of this one. I thought people would really dig the cast and the premise, but I guess it kind of just flew under the radar. Acts of Vengeance, which is an action movie starring Antonio Banderas. I didn't see it. The much maligned, much delayed Tulip Fever, starring Alicia Vikander, Christoph Waltz, and Dane DeHaan. That hits home release. Go see it if you need something to laugh at. It is really bad. Rememory, starring Peter Dinklage. I heard that was really good. I didn't get a chance to see it. The Defiant Ones is the HBO special that everybody's been raving about, and I never got a chance to see it. About the innovators in music and all sorts of other fields. I did not get a chance to see that one. And Woodshock, starring Kirsten Dunst, which I also did not see. I heard was really, really strange. I actually kind of want to see that one, even though I heard it wasn't that good. So, I don't know. So, that's all that's coming out on Blu-ray. Out of all these, I would recommend Logan Lucky. Go check that one out. Either rent it or buy it on Blu-ray. And, of course, you can do that at punchdrunkcritics.com. Just click on our shop button. All right. Let's talk about some news here. Before I jump into Justice League stuff, let me tell you about Jude Law, who is joining the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Yes, Jude Law is starring in Captain Marvel as Captain Marvel. Now, before you're confused, yes, Brie Larson is still playing Carol Danvers, a.k.a. Captain Marvel. But Jude Law is playing the original Captain Marvel, Mar-Vell. He's sort of a mentor character to her in the movie. In the comics, Mar-Vell is different. He's a hero of his own. He's half Kree, half human, I believe. And he's one of Marvel's most iconic heroes. In fact, I think the best death story, because the character does die in the comics. The character dies after years of being a hero. He has a storyline called The Death of Captain Marvel. It's an iconic story. And it brings a realistic spin on superheroes. You know, the kind of thing you just did not see very often. You only saw it on occasion, you know, and it was rare. So he's an important figure in the Marvel universe, and I'm curious to see how they're going to use him in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Is he a character who's going to be sticking around, or is he just going to be here for just this one movie to play a sort of mentor role to the new Captain Marvel, and we're not going to see him anymore? I think that when you bring in somebody like Jude Law, you want him around for the long haul. So I'm hoping that's the case. I don't know if we'll ever see him suited up, though. I don't know if we'll ever get that. So I really want to see what they do with him, because that is a potentially huge role that he's taken on. Potentially really, really big. All right, let's talk about Justice League. We got to talk about Justice League a little bit. Now, Justice League opened up pretty weak last week. $94 million domestic, which is not good at all. I think I had about $280 worldwide, though, which is significantly better. But it's still a massive disappointment, considering this is the freaking Justice League. And you're expecting a billion-dollar effort from this overall. Well, I mean, so with that sort of disappointment, that underwhelming start, of course, there's a lot of finger-pointing and a lot of mystery surrounding what the future of the DC Extended Universe is going to be. First of all, a rumor came out that because Joss Whedon was a co-director on Justice League, that meant he was no longer going to be directing Batgirl. This one that he's got coming out soon. That rumor was put out there a few days ago that he was off of Batgirl. But no. Reports are that Batgirl is still happening. Joss Whedon is still on board, and he is in the process of writing the script right now. So Batgirl is still happening. We don't know many details about that movie. We know it'll be Barbara Gordon, the Barbara Gordon version of Batgirl, which means we probably should see J.K. Simmons as Commissioner James Gordon, her father. He should be in the movie somewhere, I would think. I'm curious to see if the Joker is going to show up. That's what I'm curious about. But Joss Whedon in a Batgirl movie makes sense to me. There's been talk that Justice League could lose Warner Brothers $100 million, which is obviously a lot of money, nothing to sneeze at, just based off the numbers. And these aren't official numbers. This is just numbers crunching done by Forbes, and they could always be wrong. They can't predict merchandising sales and things of that nature. And, of course, figuring international box office is a little bit tougher than figuring domestic, but they predict $100 million loss of Warner Brothers. Now, we'll see how that happens. As of right now, in fact, the numbers just came out for this week. Justice League made another $40 million domestic. It lost to Coco, which opened to $49 million this week. I knew it was going to lose to Coco. That was obvious. But overall, Justice League now has $480 million after 2 weeks. That's not bad. We should be looking at least $800 million, possibly $900 million, by the time this is over worldwide for Justice League. And no matter what, if that's the case, then this movie is going to be a positive one for Warner Brothers. It's going to be spun here as being a loser for Warner Brothers. Because no matter what, it's still less than what we expected from it. But if it ends up making $800 to $900 million, then Warner Brothers are going to push ahead on Justice League 2, and they're not going to change much. I think the biggest change they could make is probably to reduce Zack Snyder's role in the DCU. Because I think a lot of the problems that they've had have surrounded him. audiences just don't buy into Zack Snyder as the director of these movies anymore, which is why you saw Wonder Woman do so well when he had nothing to do, when he wasn't involved. Suicide Squad, whatever you want to make of it, Suicide Squad made $800 million. Suicide Squad did really well for a movie that has no well-known characters in it. Suicide Squad made $745 million. Excuse me. Sorry about that. Suicide Squad was a hit. So, with no major characters in it. Yeah, it had a couple big-name stars, Will Smith and Margot Robbie, but neither one of them has been a box office star in recent years anyway. So, it's kind of hard to put that on them. So, the fact that movie did so well suggests, again, that audiences are really kind of just soured on Zack Snyder. So I think when and if you see Justice League 2, you're going to see a different director behind the camera. Maybe Joss Whedon, maybe somebody else, but it's not going to be Zack Snyder, that much I can promise you. You're seeing a lot of outcry right now for Snyder's cut of Justice League, though. There's a petition out there right now demanding that Warner Brothers release his cut. A cinematographer on the set also wants to see Snyder's version of the movie. And a stuntman who worked on the film says Snyder's version needs to be put out there as well. So you're getting a lot of outcry for this. The thing is, there was no finished Snyder cut. Snyder left the production early, remember, because of a family tragedy. So there was no finished cut. There are elements that were shot for his version that clearly did not end up in the version that was completed, the one that Joss Whedon finished. If you want to go and you just look up all the scenes that were left that were from trailers and TV spots that didn't end up in the movie, you can see there's a lot of stuff out there that did not make it into the movie. That stuff is still out there, but it was never put into an assembled final cut. So I don't know what these people are asking for exactly. I mean, I guess you must see the deleted scenes from them. Maybe those will be added into the Blu-ray release or something. But I don't know. I don't think they're going to get what they're asking for. But there's an outcry out there for Snyder's vision of this movie. And I think with so many people out there asking for it, Warner Brothers is going to do something. They're going to try and do something. I don't know what. Maybe they'll try to assemble something. But they're going to have to do something to try and quiet these people or to appease them. And I think you may see them try to put together a Snyder cut of some kind. Maybe they'll do like those X-Men movies from back in the day where they would allow you to watch it with the deleted scenes included in the movie, which every time I did that, it always felt awkward. So maybe they'll do something like that. But something's going to happen for Justice League. I can count on you. I can guarantee you that. And I do think we're going to get Justice League 2. I know a lot of people are out there trying to make it seem as if the DCU is dead because Justice League didn't perform as well as it should, but I disagree. I don't think it will lose $100 million, number one, because you also got to factor in home release sales as well, which is probably going to be huge for this no matter what. That's going to be huge. I don't think it's going to lose Warner Brothers any money. In fact, I think they'll end up in the black eventually. And the way that they tease the end of the movie, they almost have to do a sequel because everybody wants to see that sequel that they set up. So I'm a bit more positive on it than other people are. Anyway, and that's it. That's it for news. It was pretty much all Justice League stuff. But this has been a quiet week because it's Thanksgiving. And I hope everybody had a great holiday. I hope you ate your fill of turkey. I sure as hell did. I'm about to eat some more in about 5 minutes. As soon as I get off this show, I'm about to do the same thing. I'm about to eat some more turkey and stuffing and get ready for football. But that's it for this show. Yeah, it's been fun. Chris Bunbury on here talking movies with me again. Where's my music? There. So next week is another quiet one. Holidays, post-holidays, it's always quiet. We'll be talking about James Franco's Disaster Artist, about the making of one of the worst movies ever made, The Room. It's a cult favorite. It's a phenomenon. It's an awful movie. Disaster Artist is about the making of it. And you heard me and Chris kind of allude to it earlier. So I'm definitely going to be talking about that. All right? I want to thank everybody for joining me on this show, Cinema Royale. Find me every day at punchcardcritics.com and, of course, here on Blog Talk Radio. Thank you. Thank you very much. Goodbye.